It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to another World Cup Fracker episode. This is episode 10. I'll be your host today, Owen, aka Expat from the NSO. Joined by three other lovely cast members, all very well-spoken cast members as well. Got a nice little mix tonight as well. I've got two members from New Spurs Order, two members from Touchy Gooners, and you know, we just come together during these World Cup moments. What can I say?
What are you saying? North London Derby link up for the World Cup, yeah?
Yeah, Sporting, Sporting.
Ceasefire. Young little ceasefire, you know what I mean, for now. And then we resume regular programming later.
Exactly. Or there might be a few little bits of politics in the England camp as well, but we could speak on it. That was the tone stuff. I think it was Shabs. Shabs there, how are you doing, firstly?
Yeah. Yo, yeah, man, I'm all right. It's my first World Cup Fracker appearance, so yeah, man, I'm good. I'm glad to be here.
Nice. And we've got next Mr. Carboholic. Sean, how you doing?
Yeah, all good, bro. All good, man. Yeah, thank you, man. Second one for me, but yeah, no, all good.
Yeah, no, it's nice to be joined by you again. And let's see, last but certainly not least, Yao, aka Scott Hall.
I think people have been calling for the bad guy to give his take on, these World Cup games. So this is my first. And I'd like to start off by saying I hope England go out in the next round.
Hey, I'm not going to be triggered by that. I'm not that patriotic kind of a fan. Let's see, if you've seen the video version of what we can see through camera, I've just got Yao dancing in the background. So don't mind me as I just quickly skim through one of the games. See, we've had a day today where we've got the penultimate group games, and the way they've decided to broadcast it is we've got two games on at once now instead of the 10 a.m. games, which effectively made a lot of our mornings up. So we'll see two kickoffs at 3 o'clock, not even the 1 o'clock kickoff. Again, Senegal was first up against Ecuador. Now, this took me way longer than I care to admit to actually find how to watch this game on ITV4. I think I missed like the first 15-20 minutes, but alas, I caught a fair bit of it. It was a must win for Senegal, AFCON winners, without the talisman Sadio Mane, and Ecuador only needing a draw. Ecuador, me and Sean spoke about a fair bit on, see, our last World Cup Fracker together a few days ago, and spoke about how many good players they've got, as good of a cohesive unit they have, and you'd probably fancy them as favourites coming into this, especially only needing a draw. And you kind of wondered where kind of Senegal's potency would come from, because Ismaïla Sarr hadn't necessarily stepped up yet, but it was a cagey start. I don't think Ecuador really set to impose themselves too much. Obviously, only the draw, but quick ball came over the top. And Hincape, who a lot of European clubs seem to be scouting at the moment. Again, a lot of Spurs fans seem to want him. So I've been obviously just having a little eye on him, just seeing how he's been performing. And pretty clumsy foul on Sarr. He got excited, kind of got into position a bit too quickly of anything, ran past the ball and ended up charging straight into him. Sarr scores the penalty, and then second half, still cagey. And it was a half of what seemed to be just effective set pieces. Ecuador didn't look like scoring up until what was a well-worked set piece. He managed to get flicked across to Caicedo, who just tapped it into the back post. It didn't look like Senegal could offer anything in terms of a goal back. I think Koulibaly's shirt was completely sweated through from like the 10th minute. And but he ended up popping up and scoring the second goal from a poorly defended set piece from Ecuador. And they saw out the game. Ener Valencia, who's been a threat, I think he's got 6 goals in his last 5 caps for Ecuador, and he was just completely shut out by Diallo and Koulibaly for pretty much the whole game, and they saw out the win to qualify. So yeah, fair play to them, doing it without their talisman. I'm trying to think who they've got in the next round. Could be an interesting time.
They got England.
Oh yeah, there we go. Spoiler alert for further topics to talk about. Other game in the group, Holland versus Qatar. You probably set that up for someone who could potentially win the golden boot further down the line, because this is mainly a team who you want to fill your boots against. Depay came in to start. Sean, do you want to take us through that one? Just how it kind of started off?
Yeah, I thought, obviously, naturally, we've seen Qatar. They're probably like the worst hosts you've had, you know, in a World Cup. They're probably far and away the worst team. Everyone, you know, everybody eats against Qatar in it. So, you know, but I've not been impressed by Holland generally, to be fair. And especially in this game, you're thinking you're going to have like pretty much 95% of the ball. Do you really need to line up with 3 centre backs? You could go with, you could easily go, you know, Van Dijk's used to playing in the back 4 all the time as well. You could literally just have 2 and just bomb everyone else on. But I still thought it was quite negative. They don't create much, man. Maybe just because I'm thinking, when I think of Holland, I just think nostalgic in it. You know, I think of Van der Vaart, Schneider, Van Persie, all of them just ex-ballers, even going back to Bergkamp, etc., etc. So I am generally quite underwhelmed by this Dutch side, man. And yeah, I just, it's meh. I thought it was meh, you know. I didn't think the game was that interesting. They won 2-0, but I think, you know, if they really wanted to, they could have, you know, maybe flung on someone creative like a Noah Lang. He's not had any minutes, I don't believe, this tournament. Bervine, they could have just thrown on 3 forwards and just really, really gone for it. Packed them, you know, had 3 like attacking midfielders as well. But hey, what is it with me? I think, you know, the way I view football, I always want teams to attack in it. But I think, you know, there's quite a lot of reactive or maybe pragmatic coaches within this tournament in it. So it's, for a lot of them, it's safety first before, you know, they before they look at anything else. So yeah, I thought Cody Gakpo was probably a highlight. We were discussing him in our group chat earlier. You know, we're probably split on him as a player, but there's no doubt, you know, he scored in every single group game for Holland so far this tournament, and I think he's probably been a highlight. He's got great ball striking. He comes in live in and around the area. So you know, there's been heavy links with United, so it's probably, you know, not helping his price tag. Yeah, and we know how United like to overpay for man. So, so we could easily see that. So, yeah, I think he's probably been the biggest highlight for Holland so far this tournament.
I've seen he's probably added like another 10, 15 million.
Yeah, to you know how United are. From when they paid 100 mil for Anthony, they're probably going to pay like 70 mil for Gakpo. You know how stupid that club is, man. So, I think overall he's done well. Me personally, I'm still not overly convinced about him as a player, even though I think he's a good finisher. He's got good ball striking off either foot, but so it'd be interesting to see how it is if he does come to the league and how that translates. But no doubt for me, he's been far and away their standout. I've not been impressed by Holland at all, but you know, we spoke after the last one, Ecuador absolutely blammed them, Holland, when they played them. I'm very unlucky not to beat Holland in that game. But yeah, I think obviously today was a procession. We knew Holland were going to dominate. We knew they were going to pen Qatar back in for prolonged heavy periods. And maybe they could have created more than they needed to, but they got the job done essentially, which is the most important thing. So yeah, 2-0 for them, and we'll see how they fare against USA in the last 16.
For sure. And obviously you guys have seen quite a lot of Gakpo as well. And yeah, I've been underwhelmed by Netherlands as well. Like, they were, from what I could see, they looked like a decent cohesive unit in the Nations League and their qualification stages. And I feel like Depay coming into that fold now is a profile that could work really well with Gakpo. And Frenkie de Jong had a better game today from what I saw, but obviously that's probably caveated by playing the worst team in the competition. But I'll quickly move to you, Shabs. How far do you think Holland can go in this competition? Like, do you think they can switch it on now Depay's back, de Jong playing better, to be playing kind of closer to what they were in qualifying?
Well, I want to take it back just a tiny piece, because I think a part of the frustration with Holland is that, yeah, they boast there's legacy there, there's football heritage there, so they boast a lot of quality. They're a rich footballing nation in terms of talent and ability. And yeah, Sean's right. We're used to seeing Dutch sides of the past with just teched out footballers, who can turn it on, who've got silks. I think a hallmark of this Dutch side so far in this tournament is that they've looked and come across as organised and structured, but quite pedestrian, quite rigid, quite robotic, and lacking ingenuity, really. I don't think they've had the toughest group at all, so I would have expected them to have breezed it and done more so than they have done. I think a part of that really is LVG. The coach, and we know what he's about, really. I think that's been overlooked a bit when I've heard people talking about Holland's performances so far in the tournament, but we know what he's about. And I think if you can think back to his time in Man United, for English fans, Premier League fans and followers, and especially United fans, you'll say, yeah, there are some upsides to it, and it can bring about results, but the football was at times quite difficult to watch and quite difficult to follow. And I think that's been pretty much the case for them throughout the tournament so far, to be fair. Qatar are not a good side at all, not by any means, not by any stretch of imagination. Qatar also played with three at the back. I think what they've done, they really packed the midfield, really, really packed the midfield. So there wasn't, and Qatar tried to play, they didn't sit deep defensively either. So a lot of the game was played in and around the middle third. With Holland just trying to probe and try to fight wide areas, and De Jong was rotating with Klaassen and with Gakpo or Depay, and the rest were kind of holding their shape, and the wide guys were Blind and Dumfries, and they were just kind of really staying Daily wide to Blind try and stretch well. Them and draw them out. Yeah, Daily Blind, yeah. So you kind of look at that and you say, what's going on? But I think De Jong was really good today. I think opposition aside, I think De Jong was good. He was all over the place, kind of fulfilled the role of a roaming playmaker for me today. He was picking the ball up off the defence, as we know he's good and so adept at when he was at Ajax. But he was also popping up, and I think the real creativity looked like it was coming through him and Klaassen. I think they combined well. When they did kind of get further forward, and obviously you got into the box and got on the end of, got on the end of Depay's shot and got his goal. So yeah, good for them and good for him. But yeah, ultimately they're quite boring. I think that Holland will. Who have they got? They've got USA. I think they'll probably have enough to beat USA. To be fair, but depending on who they get after that, I don't think that they'll go really deep into the tournament. And I do just want to kind of give Gakpo a bit of love as well, because I don't think he's an amazing player. I definitely see his limitations, but I think we're looking at a player who, if you consider the level that he's played at, both for PSV and for Holland at the moment, he's producing results. He's scoring goals. He scored three goals in three games with three shots. He's the first player to score three goals in three consecutive games for Holland as well. So in the group stages of a World Cup. So, you know, I think that counts for something as well. He scored one goal on his left, one goal on his right, and a headed goal as well. So he's having an impact. And I think we have to judge him based on the level that he's performing at right now. And I think that it's a good level. So if he wasn't doing it, you know, people will be criticizing him as well. He's actually scoring goals. So maybe he's not as impactful throughout games, but he's scoring goals and having an effect and deciding games or cushioning games for Holland as well. So deficiencies aside, I think you've got to give some credit there.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk throughout this World Cup of players rising it for their country, especially for nations who aren't as well gifted with like top players. And, you know, you've got to show love for Gakpo for doing that. So you guys have seen him up close as well at PSV while he's played Arsenal in the Europa League as well. And maybe he didn't show out as much then, but I mean, if he's doing it at the top level on the world stage, then yeah, all props to him. And we'll see what he does in the knockouts against the USA. Yeah, just to round up the heritage Netherlands, do you see them go far in this World Cup at all?
You know, we could all just say on the basis of what we've watched that they wouldn't go, or we don't expect them to go that far into the tournament. Problem with tournament football is, you know, you can have a horrible group stage and absolutely smash it through the knockouts. So I think it's fair for everyone to say, you know, on the basis of what we've seen in the group stages, that they may have enough to beat USA. I also wouldn't be surprised if USA beat them. I might be slightly surprised on the basis of, you know, the heritage of Holland, but on the basis of what we've seen, I wouldn't be surprised if USA give them a good enough game. But I can't see them going past the quarterfinals, to be honest with you. If they come up against, even on the basis, I'm just throwing a team out there, but if they come up against Portugal, for argument's sake, I think Portugal will turn them over. Like, I don't know what it is about this Dutch team. They have enough in this team to cause problems in terms of the players we know, the ballers that they have at their disposal. But they just don't look like they can cause those same problems. It's kind of similar to the same issue I have with the German team that I've been watching. I don't know whether it's them trying to get into the groove and, you know, taking, you know, each game as it comes. But like I said, we could be talking all of this and they could go smash USA 5-0 and would have egg on our face. So let's wait and see. I don't think they'll go past the quarterfinals for me personally.
Now, the only other thing I do want to say, and I want to play devil's advocate a little bit, is knowing full well what I said as well about Holland and how I see them moving forward in the tournament and what it depends on, but also taking on board what Yao said. The other side of the coin is that they've lacked ingenuity moving forward, but defensively, they haven't really been troubled. Now, again, is that because their group is weak or perceived as being relatively weak? I don't know. I think you could argue that. But in tournament football, it's the sides with the good defences as well, the teams who keep things tight, who tend to progress and do well, especially when it comes to knockout football. And they've conceded one goal so far. You know, they've scored five, I think it is. So that's something as well I want to say. And yeah, I think Van Dijk is not the player that he used to be, but I think he's still an asset in terms of a very good defensive player. Today they went with Timber and Nathan Ake, but they've also got De Ligt, you know, again, who some might say the jury's out on him and he needs to prove himself after a bad spell at Juve. But they've got some strength defensively as well. So I think there's a possibility as well to keep it tight. And I think by that merit, they could also surprise us, despite me thinking that they won't go much further. I think there's also that possibility they could surprise us.
Yeah, there was a lot of the the goals I saw in their lead up to qualifying for the World Cup were scored. A lot of them were in transition as well. So you kind of expect them to probably suit playing teams where the onus is perhaps on them to come onto the Netherlands a bit, like you say. And from what I saw, just the quick little interchanging movements and play from even Bergwijn. Like Bergwijn was able to rise it for them. He had a good bit of play with Depay and Gakpo as well. I feel like Weghorst was even chipping in. I wouldn't expect Vincent Janssen to contribute to that team after seeing him up close for Spurs. And just that kind of number nine he is, he's not as dynamic as of a forward as those that have been effective for the Netherlands from what I've seen. So, yeah, I think you're right. And like even against Portugal as well, like if it came to that, I'm not sure if the tournament lines it up for them to play Portugal if they beat USA. But if it was Portugal per se, I mean, it was a really tight game between them and Uruguay. And I think Netherlands are better than Uruguay. So, yeah, who knows? Who knows? If they can solve that puzzle with Frenkie de Jong playing a bit better as well, I think a lot of play just relies on him just to be able to resist certain bits of pressure and able to progress forward in deeper areas so their forwards can transition quickly. As long as he's able to rise it, then who knows? Who knows? Obviously, with USA being their next game, that kind of segues nicely into another penultimate group game, which was played today. It was a bit of a spicy one as well, playing Iran. A lot of political things surrounding this, especially outside of Qatar as well. But yeah, they come together, played what's supposed to be a nice, tasty spectacle. Coming into this, I'll quickly go to Yao again. Who did you kind of expect to go through in this? Bearing in mind, again, one team needing a draw, one team needing a win. Iran only needing the draw and USA needed to go for it. Like, I don't know. What did you think would play out?
I had a feeling.
And why are you smiling so sadistically for?
I'm smiling because, I'll be honest with you, I wanted Iran to win. I like a bit of controversy in football. But I had a feeling USA were going to win. Iran haven't looked good in this tournament. I know they beat Wales, but I'm going to be honest. I wasn't impressed with Wales either in this tournament. So I felt like it was going to be a cagey game, tight game. I understood the kind of tactics that Iran might employ in this match. And to be honest with you, 1-0 kind of, well, for those that didn't watch it, gives off the impression that, you know, it was far tighter than what it was. But having seen a lot of the highlights, it looked like USA had quite a fair number of chances, and really and truly, had they been a bit more better in the final third, it could have been a slapping. So I had a feeling that, you know, USA were going to win, but controversy wanted me to see Iran rise it on these men. But, you know, USA rise it again, and I just don't know why they put that game on ITV, not ITV, on freaking on iPlayer, bro. That game should have been on BBC One, because we knew England were going to punch up, you know, who they had to face. So
I'm not sure we did, to be fair.
Nah, I wasn't sure. I think we all knew that. But yeah, USA, from the highlights that I saw, USA deserved their victory, to be honest with you, even though it was a far more cagier affair than they would have liked it to be.
Yeah, man. The midfield are getting quite a lot of plaudits as well, from what I saw. There was a lot of quick vertical passes into their forwards. Every time I looked up, they looked like they were creating dangerous attacks. And you got Tyler Adams, Winston McKennie, who's been linked with Spurs again quite a lot, and Moussa in the midfield. And Sean, you know, if you want to take us through that USA performance, in particular, a certain midfielder.
Yeah, I quite like the composition of the USA midfield. I said, you know, I was really impressed with them against England. I thought, you know, and one of the issues I've had with England is that, you know, if a team can match their base athleticism rate, they lack that sort of ingenuity and that ability to control games and situations. And I thought, if you took out the fact that you knew the names and you knew who was on either side, if you just based it on just what you were seeing, you wouldn't come out of that England-USA game thinking that England's midfield was better than USA's, in my opinion. I very much think that, especially Adams and Yunus Musa showed out in that England game. I think they showed a lot of good attributes. You know, you can tell, obviously, Adams plays, he obviously plays for Leeds, a very high intense, high octane team, but I like how aggressive and snappy he is in challenges, but he also releases the ball very, very quickly as well. Musa's got a lot of class about him. You know, I don't think, you know, this is a, people say it's controversial, I don't really care. Like, I don't actually think there's that much between him and Jude Bellingham, if I'm to be totally honest. I think Yunus Musa is very, very comfy. I think he's very comfy technically. Obviously, he doesn't get that same exposure because he's not English. He's, you know, he's out of the limelight, whatever. But I think he's a very, very classy midfielder, man. And I expect him to get picked up by a big club very, very soon. Bearing in mind, he's the same age as Jude Bellingham as well. Really, really good player. Comfy on the ball, can carry it far up the pitch as well, has proficiency in the final third. He scored quite a few bangers for Valencia from outside the box as well, man. So I just think this World Cup's probably helped to raise his profile a bit more. You know, Arsenal fans will know about him because he came through our Haaland Academy, but he chose to leave quite early. So, you know, even some Arsenal fans don't know a lot about him. But yeah, he left to pursue first-team football and he's been playing first-team football for Valencia for a couple seasons, man. So I think he's a good player, and I like the way him, you know, them as a unit work. I'm not as keen on McKennie personally myself. I would like maybe like a Brennan Harrison, who I rate quite highly actually from Leeds as well, maybe to get a little spot in the midfield. But I think USA have some decent options, man. I think people should probably show them a little bit more respect, you know, than they maybe get. You know, and obviously with the next World Cup being in America, I think there's time for them to develop again. You know, this is a very young group, very young team. But I think obviously the main boiling point is that they lack cutting edge up top, and that will ultimately probably be why they go out against, you know, Holland in the next round. They don't have a striker. I think everyone knows they try to centralise everything a bit too much, in my opinion, through Pulisic. So it can be a bit too predictable at times, which is why I think, you know, they should pay, you know, Gio Reyna on the other side, mix it up a bit, have a bit more unpredictability. That'd be my only issue with them. But they've got a lot of PMP in that team, you know, Robinson at left back, Sergino Dest at right back. So it's a very, very fast, very aggressive, very athletic team. So there's a lot. I like the way they play, man. So just, you know, but more quality. Ultimately, they'll come down, you know, to a lack of quality in the final third is ultimately, I think, what will cost them. But I expected them to beat Iran tonight. They did. But like Yar said, it wouldn't actually surprise me if they did throw up an upset against Holland. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
No, it wouldn't surprise me either. I'm glad you touched upon the fullbacks as well, because they seem to have one of the best combinations of fullbacks in the tournament. Honestly, Ty Robinson. Sergino Dest was especially good today as well. I have no idea why Gio Reyna is not playing. I wonder if Asa, who's an American associate of Touchdown Fracker, can shed some more light on that, because it must be an injury. He didn't even get any minutes today, not even off the bench. So
yeah, but he came on against England, though, right? So I generally don't understand, because when I look at, you know, sometimes when I think, you know, maybe a bit more technical quality in the final third, I'm thinking, why not, you know, play Aronson or Reyna more? Like, you know, they'd add a bit more in the final third. So, yeah, that would be me if I was the guy. I'd probably change the shape a bit more and have both of them playing with Pulisic, you know, a bit more creativity as well. But good options to bring off the bench, I guess. So yeah, I think USA have got a bit to play with, man. So, and yeah, I think they might run, you know, especially in midfield, I think they'll be able to keep up with Holland, you know. But obviously, I think opposite ends of the box is where the difference is made. And I think ultimately they'll be found lacking there.
Yes, yeah, fair. And credit to them as well today. Obviously, Pulisic got the goal. Again, they created so many chances in that first half. Could have been 2-3 up. It was Sargent and Weah who were interchanging really well. It looked like Sargent was coming off the right more, just to create that space for Weah. Got really unlucky on the cusp of half time with an offside decision, which looked incredibly tight, like millimeter tight. And he had a really good finish, which looked like it made it 2-0. Got ruled out. Obviously, Iran came back into it a bit. But USA looked comfortable, I've got to say. Like, Shabs, did you have anything to summarize? I guess that the USA Iran game?
Yeah, again, similarly, I liken USA a little bit to Leeds United. So again, I think there are points of similarity there, and definitely the intensity that they play with for me reminds me of such. Tyler Adams, especially this season, his performances for Leeds, performances for USA. There's a lot of, you know, I think there's that's a reason for me for the similarities again. Aronson has been all right for Leeds. He's not starting in the same way for USA. But again, like Sean, I like him. I think he's a player who actually does add and offer something. And it's a bit crazy to me why they're not starting him and playing with him. I think they're organised. I think they're a more organised kind of national version of Leeds United. Again, defensively tight. And they haven't conceded much. I think they've also conceded one goal this whole tournament. But yeah, they haven't scored.
Yeah, they haven't conceded from enough. They haven't conceded from open play in this tournament yet. So
they have not.
Good camera. Carter Vickers started tonight and contributed to that clean sheet as well.
Well, yeah, Cameron Carter Vickers did. Ream did as well. So you know, it's a collaborative effort. Dest as well, and Robinson as the fullbacks were mentioned also.
Hey, Matt Turner, bro.
And Matt Turner in goal, yeah. So yeah, more than capable understudy. So yeah. You know, that's it. But Tyler Adams again playing the central hub in midfield, very industrious, very physical, very intense. But also he completed the most passes in the game. For the USA, he got the most tackles. He won the most duels. I think he won 7 duels today. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we can caveat it by saying this against Iran. You know, they're not a side that we expect to necessarily overpower USA, but I think he still has to go out there, put in that performance, put in that level of intensity and still come up with those numbers. And he did, and the team won. So, yeah, that's that. And also credit to him as well, because when we're talking about the off-field stuff, and this isn't a political pod, but it's my opinion, I'm going to give it my opinion, but in the pre-match presser as well, he was put in an uncomfortable position, I think, as a footballer, where he was asked by an Iranian reporter you know, some questions and comments about his own stance and how he can turn out representing for the USA when they're a country with lots of oppression and racism and discrimination and so on and so on, and also criticized him for mispronouncing Iran. And I think actually he was eloquent in his response. No doubt that would have rattled me. That would have rattled someone a bit less professional, but I think he handled that quite well in a public way. He was put on the spot uncomfortably, but I think he answered it with dignity, and so credit to him. I don't know too much about his off-field persona. I don't know anything about his off-field persona at all, really, to be fair, but seeing that, I was like, oh, actually, credit to him for the way that he's dealt with that. So
I didn't know about that press office thing, you know. I didn't know about it, but I'll be brutally honest. But I'm professionalism. Yeah, you can't don't put me in no sticky situation like that. Like that kind of stuff infuriates me.
This is why he's the pro footballer.
No, I would have been like, get her out of my face now.
I hear it. And you get media training for that. And you know, there might have been sanctions for the reporters. There might not be. There might be a whole freedom of speech thing. And you know, I think I don't respect things that intentionally put someone who's in the spotlight in an uncomfortable position where it's unprovoked. You know, I don't think Tyler Adams done anything to kind of deserve that line of questioning. It was just a question from a reporter about, well, you know, we're not happy with the state of play here in Iran, but you represent the United States of America as a black person. So what do you have to say? You know, how can you represent them in it?
Hey, that is
it's nasty. It's a bad position for him to have been put in. But like I said, I think he dealt with it well, given the circumstances.
I think so as well. We've seen a couple of those kind of questions being asked, and you've got a couple of different approaches to it. You've got the Carlos Quiroz approach, or, you know, I just remember seeing, watching that clip of that question being asked. Tyler Adams was just more and more composed as the reporter was going through that question more and more. And you can tell that, you know, the question that was being asked of him was just getting heavier and heavier. And he was almost just like, okay, yeah. It didn't seem to faze him at all. And he even like thanked him for correcting his pronunciation of saying Iran. Like, I think it was just his accent anyway, like, because he's American accent, he says Iran instead of Iran. And yeah, he ended up correcting himself, thanking the reporter, and addressed the issue the reporter asked him about. So yeah, fair play to him, man. Yeah, good summary on the USA performance in general. I was quite critical of Tyler Adams going into this tournament as well. Like, I didn't think he'd been that great for Leeds from what I'd seen, but he's been rising it. But yeah, that might have just been from the little I've seen and him getting sent off in the last game I saw him play as well. So yeah, I mean, it'll be an interesting tie to see what USA can do against the Netherlands, to be honest. Like, I'll be personally looking forward to it. But we move on now to probably the most watched game today. Again, like, a game being played at the same time as another one. It is what it is. We're starved of certain scheduling for football matches in England anyway, so we're pretty used to it. But yeah, England against Wales. It felt like a bit of a dead rubber for England, but Wales needed, I think it was like a 4-0 win to qualify. See Captain Wales in Bale looking to cause an upset, and England made a fair few changes. They got Kyle Walker in instead of Trent, or maybe a certain Benny Blanco.
Instead of
Ben White. I do you know what? It was a little cheeky comment on Ben White, but for, like, really and truly, I actually wanted to see him get some minutes, to be honest. But yeah, I think Trippier was just getting rested, to be honest, as it looks like he's first choice. And then finally you get to see Foden come in, Rashford and Henderson. Shabs, what did you think of kind of that lineup against Wales? And how that kind of played out in midfield, seen Mason Mount dropped as well.
I mean, some of it made sense to me. I mean, I don't think Trippier in particular has performed well in these first two games, if I'm keeping it a buck. So I wasn't surprised. I was quite glad to see someone else starting that right back today. I'm not sure that you needed both Rice and Henderson. Me personally, I might have rested Rice, just rested him, because I didn't really see Wales providing any real kind of defensive threat. And I think Rice and Hendo are stabilizers to kind of play both of them in a double pivot. I think England could have had someone there who was a bit more creative or expansive or a bit more comfortable in their passing. I probably would have started Henderson, maybe Bellingham deeper. I would have started Foden in the 10. My star boy Saka would have got a run out, because I think England, again, in the opening exchanges for me, again, looked like they were lacking something, some real penetration and kind of, you know, I like Foden. I like who he is. I like what he offers as a footballer. But I think utilising him for England is a very, very different entity to kind of how you utilise him for Man City. And yeah, I didn't see enough of players trying to take on their man and really go at the fullbacks in the first half from England, which I think is exactly what they should have done. I think they should have really looked to kind of kill off the game early doors. I didn't really see enough of that. So kind of frustrated me a little bit in terms of the lineup. That said, I think it was kind of a run-of-the-mill performance for England. I think it was a good result for England. But I wasn't... The performance didn't wow me, if I'm keeping it a buck as well. The performance really didn't wow me. I think, yeah, a few individual performances. Yeah, definitely. You know, Rashford, we've got to give him his dues today, but I think overall the collective team performance, I didn't look at it and think, yeah, this England side. I more so looked at it and said, this Wales side are really bad, than this England side are really good. And then the other thing as well is that with the rotation options and Gareth Bale, and I think, you know, so a bit like Marmite with Gareth Southgate, some are kind of like, yeah, he's all right, and some are like, nah.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We've had a bit of enough of him, but, you know, I think there are rotations that he could do and factor in that lean into players' strengths, especially players who kind of know each other and interact with each other quite well at club level. So it might have been, and when you bring in a player like Foden, who you know, is quick, he's got a very quick processing speed. He moves the ball quickly. He wants to link up with other players and interchange and whatnot. I think it's a miss to not bring in or have him starting when there are other players who kind of facilitate that style of play as well. So, for example, like a Grealish, I think, you know, Foden and a Grealish would work quite well, because that would just, they would combine quite organically, and we've seen them combine organically, both for club and country. Foden and Saka, they don't play together at club level, but in terms of tempo and, you know, combining and being able to kind of link up in that way, I think that could work quite well. But again, we don't see, even in defensive selections as well, I think you could see players selected who more naturally complement each other. So it's just a bit disappointing that Southgate doesn't use or utilize these players or refresh the squad in that way. But I really don't think he needed to. I think he could have played some different players today, definitely. Also, Kane. Shout out to Kane for getting the assist. But big man, it's a World Cup. 3 games, no goals. Come on,
almost gave it Jesus-esque there.
Well, I mean, don't.
You probably knew I was going to say that anyway.
Don't chat about my.
Hey,
guy,
listen, but, yeah, and
hey, Kane has goals, man. 3 games done. He needs to get a goal, man. He needs to score. This is the World Cup. You know, we talk about Kane consistently with the biggest of names in the striking department. And I'm not saying it's not deserved, but we're at the World Cup. He needs to score goals. And it's disappointing with this weak group that he's not scored. I think we can all be honest in that disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, Sammy Mockbell was saying, before the game, if you're familiar with the journalist, he's pretty credible, saying that, you know, Kane's struggling with a foot injury going into this game, but he's asking Southgate, should he start? He's asking Southgate to start, basically. He still wants to play for his country, da da da. Yeah, you want to go through that, I guess, that England performance and that Kane situation as well, given his performances.
Can I just quickly big up Sammy Mockbell, though, because he's a friend of the podcast as well. He's been on a couple of times. So big up Sammy Mockbell. But still, I'm not buying it with Kane and the foot injury. But he needs to score goals. It's food and drink. Come on.
Okay, fair enough. Yao, you want to take us through that? It's the objective and unbiased host.
I think just for spice, I'd like to say that, yeah, Shabs is right. He should be scoring goals, but, you know, also their style man should also be finding the goal and not off the bench, innit? But for another day, we'll talk that up, innit? We'll bring that back. Don't worry. We'll bring that back on another day. As for Mook, as I like to call him. Listen, bruv, you know, a lot of people have been talking, especially even on the NSL pod, you know, that he's world class and all of this jazz. Well, this is the stage to show it, right? That was a weak group. Nobody's going to say that group was strong. And the performances haven't held up. You know, he's not the only one. You know, I haven't really been impressed by England's performances. And I know they won their first game 6-2. I didn't really care. It's like, yeah, whatever, man. Walk in the park. But against Wales, I thought Wales stunk today. I absolutely thought they stunk across the entire, like the whole game. I was like, this team is ass. Like, wow, they are capital letters, 40 inch of booty. Just rubbish. Like, I couldn't believe what was going on. This is trash. And they put that on at prime time. I was like, whatever, bruv. So, no, I agree with what Shap said, you know. Like, this would have been a perfect time for Southgate to really, like, if there's ever going to be a game to experiment, this would have been the game. You know, just bun it. We're through in it, like, or we're likely to go through. Like, there's not going to be a four-goal swing in Wales' favour to, like, knock England out. So, this would have been a game to, like, experiment. You didn't need Rice and Henderson. I don't think you even needed Kyle Walker or Trent coming on at any point. Like, this could have been a real, like, drop Kane, you know, like, just have some man get some runouts. You know, instead, he's gone, like, I'm sorry, man, but, like, it's things like this and performances like what we've seen in the group stages where as long as I'm alive, I can't be seeing England lift no trophies. Sorry. Until I see this team, like, blam it, like, and actually, like, do some serious damage, yeah? Like, I don't want to see none of this, oh, we won the tournament. Get out of here, bruv, because that group was poo. Let's run through the teams. Iran or Iran, you know, as the Americans like to say. I'm not rating none of their players, not a single one. Yeah, that whole nation was dry.
No, Taremi, well, man. Taremi's decent, man.
I mean, well, when it comes to national football, yeah, even if you're the best player, yeah, that's not enough for me. Like there has to be, like, what saved Bale a lot at international football is that, bruv, we knew he was their best player and he would rise it. Now, obviously, he can't rise it no more, pause, because man is old, yeah. But, you know, Wales were so bad. Just so, so bad. I think the only team in this group that surprised me was USA. If I'm being honest with you, I'm like, oh, they're pretty decent. Yeah, they're not a bad outfit. You know, I wasn't impressed with England. This game was just, it's mad because it was what? 3-0 in the end? I can't remember the score now. I think it was 3-0 in the end. The goals were good. I did enjoy the goals. They were very good goals, well-taken goals. I like Rashford's goal. I like that a lot. But for the most part, I was bored. I was bored out of my mind. And then you got commentators, you know, ranting and waxing lyrical about Maguire for England. And I was like, oh, my God, get out of here. So England have got to face Senegal. I think it's a good test. Senegal don't have their star man, Mane. But we'll see, innit? We'll see if they can rise it against the African nation champions. You know what I mean? That's a real test, I guess, if you want to look at it like that, boy. So, nah. This World Cup scheduling that they've put out today was... today I was bored out of my mind. They need to sort it out tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's fair. Yeah, with Cade as well, it's hard not to be critical of him at times. Like, you can give him the excuse of, like, you know, he is needed in this team to be able to progress the ball in deeper options, because there's just not many players in this England team that are capable of it. But there are times where he could definitely be getting himself into better areas quicker. It's annoying, but it looks like he's trying to be efficient with his energy because he's declined physically. Maybe he might be carrying an injury, I don't know, but he always seems to be lethargic through big spells of certain games, especially for Spurs. Obviously for Spurs he hasn't been getting the rest, but yeah, for England, we obviously, well, England have decent rotation options that he can get a rest. Southgate's chosen not to do so. And again, he can look lethargic at times, but still providing a little bit of quality for this England side. But Sean, I haven't come to you on this England game yet. What did you think of the performance, obviously, after it being 0-0 and tie at halftime?
Yeah, I think like the others and yourself, it's the, of course you're going to be frustrated with England, and the frustration tends to stem from the fact that there's a lot of good players in the squad, in my opinion. So, you know, it's a case, I think I tweeted during the game that, you know, seven of that starting 11 are playing for Champions League clubs, you know, but the way these guys are operating within game, you'd think these guys are battling relegation. Do you know what I mean? So that's what's upset with me. And obviously, we have to caveat it. You know, international managers don't get a lot of time on the training ground with players to sort of, you know, incorporate, you know, patterns, and, you know, they don't have that time. So cool, you can allow them to that extent, but I still expect to see more, you know, in terms of picking the most coherent side, picking the most progressive side, picking the side that can implement, you know, what you want to do to the best of our ability, because it seems like we're a team that, you know, is trying to or wants to progress the ball, but we're not picking players who are, you know, adept or coherent in that manner. Do you know what I mean? Because the reality is, you know, we've seen Rice and Bellingham in all three games, and they're not providing that level of ball progression we want from deep. Do you know what I mean? So Rice is good defensively, but Rice doesn't show for the ball in the build-up phase. Rice doesn't, you know, pam it through lines in the build-up phase. And that's what we were saying in our group, you know, as the game was going along. You know, when Calvin Phillips came on, don't get me wrong, obviously the game was already won, and you know, you could say game state, but, you know, he was experienced under, you know, a very progressive manager in terms of Bielsa at Leeds, in terms of he was played as a lone single pivot, in terms of how to break lines, the passing angles he chooses to, you know, to pick. So I'm really interested to see in the second half of the season how Calvin Phillips, now he's fit, gets on under Pep, because I think he's much better on the ball than Declan Rice is. You know, he's a lot progressive. Obviously, he's not as good defensively and maybe doesn't have that level of athleticism defensively, so might struggle in transition. But I think that might be something we need to look at going forward in terms of what he offers, because Henderson can't progress it. Bellingham doesn't. He's not, you know, Bellingham's not a first phase player. Rice isn't good at progressing through the first phase. He's a good ball carrier, but he's not a good, you know, in terms of, you know, breaking lines from deep. So that's why I tend sometimes not to be too harsh on the attackers, because, you know, we're not finding the attackers in good positions. We're not, you know, optimizing the way we, you know, distribute and, you know, build play, you know, construct interior play. So some of these guys, I think it's a bit harsh on them, man. So yeah, I really, with me, whenever I look at teams, I always look at the midfield, you know, because for me, midfield is the starting block of your team. You know, it's what it dictates what you can and what you can't do. And I was saying as well, which is why I wanted to see Trent at some point as well, was that if we're not going to progress it through midfield, at least get defenders who can progress it as well. Do you know what I mean? So I just think we've struggled on both points in all three games so far. And I don't trust Southgate, essentially, is the main crux of this, to find the right solution. I think he's going to continue to muddle on. I don't think he knows what's best. I think he's spoilt for choice. But even if he wasn't spoilt for choice, I wouldn't trust him to select the optimal solution, man. So it's a weird one, because obviously, you know, England are much better than Wales. It was proven in the second half. It was, you know, easy as chips, man. So I don't know. I think Senegal will be a tough test in terms of, you know, what they provide from a PMP standpoint. And, you know, we've seen sometimes when teams can match England for work rate, you know, England sometimes run out of ideas. So I don't know what he's going to do, man. But I think I'd like to see some changes, you know, in the round of last of 16, you know, because today the game got broken open by set piece. You know, it was a fantastic goal from Rashford. But had that goal not come, you would have been wondering where the goal was coming from, because in open play, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall up to that point us creating much in open play. So
no, just came to Rashford, really.
Yeah. Sorry, beg your pardon. Yeah. So obviously Rashford had that key chance, but we're clutching at straws here, right? It's not like there's a continuous flow of chances coming regularly. So I don't know, man. I don't know is essentially the crux of it. I think we will end up beating Senegal in the last 16. It might even end up going to that extra time or something. But right now, based on what I've seen, I struggle to see how we're going to get past France, because that's what it looks like it's going to be in the quarterfinals if it, you know, if it all comes to it. So Mbappe and Dembele are going to stick it on, man. So yeah, they need to, yeah, proper, he's proper, they're going to box man up. So yeah, it's going to be peak, man. Proper.
Oh, I don't know. I think seeing Mbappe score twice, I think Rashford took that very personally. Didn't
what are you to what?
Don't
come and be shameless with me.
I was just steering into that.
Listen, Sebi's not here. Man are going to ask Mbappe to come outside again, you know. Don't let him come and dunk.
Don't call Mbappe outside on England. You know?
Like, that's the last person.
Mbappe will come out, he'll circle the block, he'll done our dance, and he'll come back and dance on it again.
Mbappe has already told Pogba, don't call your shaman guy for this tournament. This is serious business. Yeah, he'll come and slam it.
There's no witch doctor thing here, bro.
Leave your witch doctor over there. But you know what? You know what? I'm listening to Sean speak about England and the playing style and that. And it's like, how do England want to play? Because the selections are very intentional in terms of who he picks and who he omits. And if you think about, he's taken defenders who can progress the play, but he doesn't select defenders who can progress the play. He's got midfielders who are comfortable on the ball and who would be all right in the first phase if you utilize them there, but he doesn't utilize them at all. He doesn't utilize them there in those positions. So you kind of say, what does he want on the ball? Off the ball, obviously, he wants a structure, a framework, some robustness, some rigidity. But on the ball, what does he actually want? How does Southgate actually want to play? And then what does he want from his wide guys? What does he want from... Does he want to play a 10 or does he not? Does he want Kane to score goals or does he want Kane to facilitate? You know, like what does he actually want? And I've been watching England for a long time and I can't answer the question. I can say what I want for England or what England should do based on what they have or whatnot. But yeah, like I was listening to Sean speak there really and thinking, what does Southgate actually want to do?
And I think it's just more upsetting just because this is now Southgate's third international tournament. He's got, you know, so you've had enough time now to quote what Shabs is saying to decide on what you want to do. And on top of that, in terms of actual squad, there aren't many international squads that are better than England's. Do you know what I mean? Generally, in terms of especially attacking options, bro, you've got so many options to choose from and it just looks so uninspired. Like Madison was fit. I would have loved to have seen James Madison at some point today, but hey-ho. It is what it is, man.
Like he's almost like trying to copy Deschamps from 2018.
Yeah,
it's kind of that mold where you've got like a third midfielder trying to play as like a box to box 8 and 10 at the same time. He's obviously quite pragmatic and just wants to like get goals through. I guess a little bit of individualism, I guess. Like Shab said, I can't really answer the question either, but I can only really say what I see. And yeah, I'm not sure if I like what I'm seeing, to be honest.
No one likes it.
I think you have to take into consideration that what Shab says is like spot on. The problem with England that I find is that it's exactly what Shab said in the sense of you've got a list of players, 26, 23, whatever the amount of players you're allowed to take for the tournament. You've got them to your disposal. You look through the England team and you could easily... And I know, obviously, we don't get paid to do this, but you could easily pick an 11 from the 20 whatever amount of players. That
yeah,
and that 11 on the attacking side of the game could be quite dangerous. Now that you know, there's always a fear, especially in tournament football, that if you go, you know, a bit too attacking, you know, you may leave yourself open on the defensive side. Something that Brazil have suffered with in the past. However, goals win games, defense win championships. I get that. You got to pick and choose when you're going to, you know, set up to be, I guess, defensive or be a bit more pragmatic. You've also got to pick and choose when, you know, you're going to be a bit more expensive or a bit more offensive. And you just need to look at the group that they were in. Their group lined up as Iran, USA, and Wales. Nobody on God's green earth is going to tell you any of those three teams should be given this current England squad in terms of the names and personnel that they have a problem. So for us to have sat and watched those three games that we, and I know people were raving about that first game against Iran. It was, outside of the goals, it was poo. Like, I honestly did not, I didn't even pay attention to it. I was like, this is such a walk in the park type of game. I was like, oh, whatever, man. Like, it was nothing for me. Like, the game that I thought, yeah, might be a bit more entertaining was the USA game. And Jesus Christ, get your pillows out. It was a snore fest. Yeah. Wow. That was bad. Like, and then today's game, listen, if these men come up against France, it's going to be Le Boxer. They're going to get clapped. And I can't wait. Mbappe, all you're going to hear is Mbappe.
What is it? Say it like Daniel Sturridge did.
No, I can't do that. You see, Daniel Sturridge,
why was that guy singing, boy? What? Is it what? Man
thinks he's in soft launch of his R&B career, bro.
He's just trying to be it again.
Man thinks he's in DBE, bro. I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, he's trying to be it again. But yeah, you know, I look at it and I like Sean said, maybe he's spoilt for Chuck. He's the most spoilt at England culture's been in a long time, because if you think about the flexibility of in terms of the players that he has and the flexibility of roles or positions that they can play in. So, yeah, you know, he used Foden out on the right today, where, you know, Foden can play anywhere behind, you know, the striker, but also he can play in midfield, you know, in the center as a deeper central midfielder. Grealish, you know, we know Grealish plays out wide on the left, but Grealish could be utilized as a 10, you know. He could definitely do that job and do that role. Mason Mount could be used as a 10. And I think England have not performed well. I think Mason Mount, you know, could definitely perform better, but I think he's picked up some stick unnecessarily, actually, where I don't think he's been any worse than any of the other midfielders that have played when he has played. But I think, you know, he's got some stick and some criticism, and I think actually he spent a lot of time trying to retrieve the ball and then progress it. And I think he's one of the few midfielders that has been progressing the ball for England when he has played, especially in that first game. I think there was a lot of, what has Mount done? He's not done nothing. But I think actually when he did get on the ball, I liked what he was trying to do. I liked what his intentions were. Execution, he got it wrong sometimes, but I liked the intent that he played with. And similarly, again, for USA. But I think, yeah, when you've got a midfielder or a defence who can't really progress the ball, can't get the ball to you, that's extremely frustrating for, you know, your more advanced players. That's extremely frustrating for a player like Harry Kane, who then has to come deep and get the ball when actually his bread and butter, like I said earlier, is scoring. And I think, yeah, actually, there are solutions in that side. But it's like, yeah, I'm not a national team coach. I'm not the England coach. I don't have the coaching or sporting credentials that Gareth Southgate has. But it's like, when we've seen that this hasn't worked so many times, to me, it screams insanity to keep trying it again, unless the intention, like we said, is just not to try and progress the ball in that way, to, I don't know, play boring football down the sides and hope to get it up in that way and play some really pedestrian brand of attacking, and then final third is chaos factor and rely on individualism and let these guys try and get their goals in that way. But yeah, I couldn't see the game being broken before Rashford's goal today. Really frustrating. Should have blown this well side away. Easy.
That's fair. I've been quite critical on Mason Mount myself. Sometimes I feel like, for all his endeavour, he lacks the awareness of where his teammates are at times, and he can be quite positive. Yeah, I do think he's a useful player, but where he forces it too much just reminds me, it's a little bit Bruno-esque, obviously not recent Bruno Fernandes, but
he's got his flaws. I'm not, you know, the chairman of the Mason Mount Defence League, not by any stretch of imagination. I'm trying to be balanced in my considerations for him. He's definitely got his flaws, but I was just giving him as an example. Is it about his utilization? Could he be utilized a bit differently? Because I think he can, but I can also understand these frustrations and why maybe when we've criticized him for not playing as well, it's not just about him having a stinker. There's a systems issue rather than an individual issue.
That's fair. Before we go to some listeners' questions, then let me just get all of your kind of ideal England, I guess the front four. I'll start with you, Nishabs. Who would your kind of ideal front four be if we're looking to rock up with the 4-2-3-1?
Oof. At the moment, I'd say I'd have Rashford on the left over Sterling. I'd have Rashford on the left, definitely, especially on form. I'd have Foden in the 10. Saka, of course, right wing. Like, come on, that's pretty straightforward and clear cut. And I'd have Harry Kane up front as my centre forward. I think that front four slaps. I think it works well together, both on and off the ball. I think there's enough creative potential in there. There's no need for Kane to have to come anywhere outside of the box, you know, to get hold of the ball or to get to the ball with those three behind him. Not at all.
That's exactly the same as my ideal front four, to be fair. Mm. Yeah, I think it's a good blend of profiles, overall ability, an understanding and awareness of teammates, experience at the highest level as well. I think that slaps. Yao, who would you be thinking of?
Honestly, I don't think there can be a change in that front four. If you wanted to be, I mean, if you want to throw it out there, maybe Madison in the 10. But honestly, that front
with
four.
With Foden? Or move Foden to the right?
I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, the four that Shabs has said is pretty much the four. Like, especially if you're going on form. Yeah, if you're going on form of all form, maybe you could argue that Kane, you know, hasn't performed well, but he's definitely still scoring goals. So on form, that front four, I couldn't see it changing. But if you did want to change, then yeah, you could possibly move Foden out to the right and then have Madison in the 10. But Rashford, listen, he's been doing his thing, you know, so I think that might be England's best front four. I'd agree with Shabs on that.
How about you, Sean?
Yeah, it's a full house round here, man. I agree with everything that's been said. You know, knowing how Kane likes to drop in, you've got Rashford and Saka who could make darts in behind, in between, you know, in that channel between the fullback and the centre backs. Both of them make that diagonal out to in run, pulling runners with them. You know, and Foden himself, you know, you watch him at City when he plays out wide, he makes a lot of runs off the ball as well. So if Kane wants to drop in, Foden can go in behind, but Foden can also drop in to help the centre midfield too as well. So yeah, that's what I'd like to see, man. And well, I was going to say deeper, I wouldn't mind seeing Calvin Phillips based on what I've seen tonight. So, but yeah, that front four, I'm cool with that, man.
That's absolutely fair. Going into some listeners' questions then. First up, I'll ask this, I guess, mainly to the floor. Who should take, this is from Khalil HT3. My apologies, I'm not used to reading out fan questions. Who should take the England job and who should the FA look to go for after Southgate leaves?
I don't know. I would have said Potter might have been a decent shot before he took that Chelsea job. That's who I would have, you know, based on what he did at Brighton, I actually quite liked Potter. So, but yeah, he's so I don't know now, generally. It wouldn't surprise me if they decided to go for a foreign manager now after post Southgate. But there's not many great English candidates. I like Eddie Howe, but I don't think Eddie Howe's going to leave that Newcastle project anytime soon, is he? So after that, you're struggling, right? There's not a great selection of English managers, so I generally don't know. But please God, just let it be someone progressive. Like, let it be someone who is suited to the makeup of this squad. That's all I can ask.
Do you guys want to know who I saw? I should have saved it really, but I saw people suggesting a particular person that probably everyone has forgot.
Who?
Poch. I think it's a bad fit.
That's the quality of manager as he is, and he's
a bad fit.
English players, but he's a club manager who likes to instill his way of playing on a day-by-day basis on the training ground as well. So I don't know if international management would suit him yet.
It's a bad fit.
I agree.
Yeah, not Potch for me, man. Nah, for me, it was Potter, and Potter won't get that England job. Nah, I don't think. Especially not off of what he's doing at the moment at Chelsea. It's not looking good for him. I worry about Potter, his job, but that's a different pod for a different day. But
now, I'm not gonna lie to you guys. Yeah, this is gonna sound bad, man. Yeah, but I'm kind of. I don't mean it in the way that it's gonna come out, but boy, I'm kind of glad that Potter's, you know, the light is on him, because obviously when Spurs were going through their managerial issues, certain man were like, Potter will come in and he'll do a thing. And I said, this guy is not ready for them kind of lights. I kept telling man.
I loved Potter for you. I loved the idea of it, and I would have loved the reality even more.
I hear the idea, but that when the lights are on, it's a different story. You know when you've been raving for 4 hours in the dark, and then they switch on the light, and you're like, "Raw man, was skanking with this thing." Nah.
It's long for Potter right now.
Right now, he needs to get back to the drawing board and hopefully turn whatever of a career he's got at Chelsea. Because boy. That England shout right now, there's no English manager, you know. Hey, they're gonna stick with Southgate for a long time. He might be at the next World Cup. I'm just saying.
Then they've never seen the promised land. So
boy, yeah, I'm just surprised you didn't recommend Jose there, yeah. But fair enough.
Did Jose at one point say he'd probably rather Portugal, to be fair.
I think it's over for them kind of managers.
Yeah, they're not old.
In terms of high profile, like super high profile, like the elite kind of and prestigious coaching roles, I think for a player like Jose, it's over. I can't see him going to a club that's a bigger level than Roma, because he's already been there and he sabotaged a lot of relationships where he has been. With hierarchy, with fan bases or whatnot. I think England will do well to stay away from Jose, 100%.
Yeah, that's fair. And then there's a couple of questions about Pulisic. This has come from Acer and Prash_CFC. Pulisic in big games, discuss, and is he better than Mason Mount? Go on, Sean. I can see you were distasteful at that.
I don't know, man. I used to like Pulisic, but I'm starting to think he's just becoming a bit of a nothing player, man, to be honest. And maybe he's been dealt a bit of a raw deal at Chelsea, if we're to keep it a buck. You know, some people would argue, you know, some Chelsea fans would argue he hasn't had a sustained run in the team, but overall, they bought him for like 60 mil. He ain't worth 60 mil. Like, you know, and I think, you know, at least with Mount, obviously, you know, sometimes Mount can flatter to deceive. I just think Mount's got more versatility, probably, you know, can be used in a different variety of ways, which could be more multifunctional for the team. And so I don't know if I would take him above Mount. I don't think I would. In fact, I definitely wouldn't, you know. Yeah, not at all, man. I've sort of gone off Pulisic, man. And this is from someone who used to, I didn't mind him previously. But yeah, nah, not for me, man. You're gonna end up back in the Bundesliga soon enough.
Yeah, they'll probably get re-signed by Chelsea if they continue their theme of signing forwards from the Bundesliga. When will they learn? But yeah, that will wrap it up for another episode of World Cup Fracker. Thank you to Sean, Shabs and Yao for joining me in this pod today. I've been your host, and keep your ears out for further World Cup content. Peace.
Podcast Network.